So we'll make that work.
Thank you very much.
Jeff, Dave?
All right.
I'm here. It's tough to hear.
Yeah, Chris?
Yes.
We're getting a lot of background noise from... Yeah, I guess you're...
I'll try and get away from it.
Okay. Dave, Jeff, did either one of you listen to the CD, and are there any questions in particular that you might have as far as what Bill and I talked about my book, which is called Building the Dream Workforce?
Not specifically about the CD, but I do have a question.
And who is this?
This is Jeff.
Okay, Jeff.
I've been listening to Bill's stuff for a while, and we're in the process of trying to upgrade our hiring and upgrade our training and all those things. And one of the things that I've noticed is that, if you're going to take the high road in hiring new people, you still have the people who have been there for a while. And although they improve, they may not improve at a rate that is encouraging to the new people. And I think that some of this is the age-old thing, focusing on tips. And I know you guys talk about that a lot, and if you're doing your job and not focusing on tips, the tips improve. But it just seems to be an ongoing battle to have them focus on more, I shouldn't say more, they do focus on more, but a couple of bad tables just seems to wreck some people's psyche. And that seems to be a tough one for us.
Well, it sounds like he's addressing that to you, and I'll throw in my two cents after you're done.
There are some people for whom this is not a good job. And, I would say if that's, if what happens on a given table is going to blow your whole night, this probably is a business that's got too high a stress for you. I mean, sometimes people just have to get past that. And it's one thing to say it; it's another thing for them to do it. But you have the obligation to keep the playing field clear.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a point at which you've got to say, "We just can't do this anymore."
Okay. It seems, and I think we've probably all heard this in our history, that it's easier to hire somebody new and train them from scratch than it is to teach old dogs new tricks. I'm hoping that once we get enough, the new enthusiastic that the old dogs either roll over and go home or upgrade.
Yeah,
but it's kind of a slow, painful process. At least I've found it to be.
Yeah, it can be because the majority is going to tend to rule, and as you're trying to shift the majority, there's that period of time where the folks that you're looking at to carry you into the future are not the majority, and you got to get them past that.
Okay.
I mean, you got to help them past that because it's going to be real, real tempting for them just to jump ship and say, look, this isn't going to work. Mark?
Yep, this is Mark, and a couple of things here. Number one, of course, you can't get rid of anybody and cut your staff so short that everybody suffers from that, but it goes back to that bad apple syndrome. I had a guy working for me, spent 14 years in the apparel industry. And we were mainly wholesalers of women's and children's apparel. We also had a few retail stores at the time, but I had a guy that was just, he was back in shipping and receiving, and all he wanted to do was complain about the people up in sales who sat in the air conditioning and on their rear ends all day, and why did I even bother to pay them? And it took a consultant coming in from the outside and asked me what's going on here to make me wake up and see I was bringing down everybody by keeping this guy just because he'd been with me so long. And he did a wonderful job back in shipping and receiving, but he was just putting a damper on the attitude for everybody. So you don't want to make a change before you're ready to, but boy, don't let that bad apple spoil the rest of them, and especially to damper the enthusiasm of these newer, higher level people that you're bringing in.
Okay.
Who else have we had join us? And I want to make sure I got everybody on here because I've got goodies for you. Who else?
It's Kevin Ross from Jake's Neighborhood Grill in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, Kev.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Who else we got on now?
Mary Holder from Generous George's in Alexandria, Virginia.
Ah, great. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing good.
Wonderful.
You get
and everybody, this is Mark. I'm going to hang up and call back in because I forgot to eliminate call waiting, and it's hit me a couple of times here, and I don't want that to bother y'all,
okay,
so I'll be
well,
back with you in a minute.
I'll catch the roll, and you can come back and do it
again. All right, I'm coming back.
Okay. Terrific. There we go. Anybody else? We had Chris, we had Jeff, we had Dave, Kevin, and Mary. Is that it? Hello?
Hi. This is Chris from the Colony.
Okay.
Background noise better now?
Oh, yeah. Terrific.
Okay,
thanks.
Great.
Appreciate that. Well, sounded like you were working.
I was.
It's a hell of a way to make a living, Chris.
It's a crazy way, but I've done it all my life.
Uh-huh. So, we just have the five on right now? Sounds like it. No peeps in the background. That'll work. Mark is fixing his phone, and he'll be back in. I'm scrambling around like crazy, getting ready to go to Italy. So
that'd be a nice trip.
That's what I get. That's my corporate meeting. Nobody ever said where you had to have the corporate meeting. So one way to burn off frequent flyer miles. Mark, you back?
I am back.
All right.
And I apologize, everybody.
Look ashamed.
So I heard that Kevin and Mary joined us. Anybody else?
No, I think that's... So we've got the Chris, Jeff, Dave, Kevin, and Mary, and who else just came in?
Peter Troutman.
Hey, Peter Troutman.
How are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. Peter Troutman from Scargo Cafe on Cape Cod.
Yes, sir.
Lovely Cape Cod. I actually did some work. This is Mark Mayberry. I did some work strategic planning years ago, Peter, with the Cape Cod Cranberry Growers Association.
Oh, really?
Good people.
Yeah.
Kevin and Mary, where are you all from? Just let me know.
This is Kevin speaking. I'm from Peterborough, Ontario, Canada.
That's right. You said that just before I hung up. And how about you, Mary? You still on?
Yes, I'm from Alexandria, Virginia, Generous George's.
All right. Some of my favorite restaurants right around there.
Right in that area, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, anyway, we've got Mark. We might as well take advantage of the time. Jeff, you got anything? Did we cover what you needed, or you want to stay with that for a little bit more?
No, I think generally, and I mean, I kind of have a sense of what needs to be done. But as I said, sometimes it seems to be a little too slow, and usually a little too painful.
It's very painful, but I'll tell you, it's there's very rare times that I go into an organization on a consulting front, whether it's in the restaurant industry or anybody else that I work with, and when I really look around, my first advice is there's two or three people that need to go, and it is painful, especially if they've been there a while, but boy, you can't believe what it does to improve the attitudes.
I have learned in the past, too, that, you know, you get rid of somebody after you labor over it and struggle, and then... the next day, all their peers end up patting you on the back saying, why didn't you do that a long time ago? So I think there's a lot of credence in what you're saying about that guy back in shipping.
I just had that happen with a client, a beautiful resort out in Missouri. I was there last week, and they just got rid of somebody in one of the key positions. And the general manager said, I couldn't believe how many people came up and thanked me for finally getting rid of this deadwood.
Well, it goes back to what I was saying, that, you know, you have that obligation to keep the playing field clear. And,
yes.
I mean, you don't want to be into knee-jerk reactions, but there is a point when you reach that point where you just say, I can't live with this. And at that point, you've got to do something, and if you make a mess, you clean it up and get on with your life. But if you don't do that, then you tend to lose the good folks because they figure, well, I mean, it doesn't matter what you do around here. You know, so the people with standards are going to leave you. So there is that point when we just have to do it, and that's, you know, nobody likes it.
Mary, Peter, any questions?
None really, but I agree wholeheartedly. Of late, I have gotten much more free about letting people go. It's and I'm not sorry at all. For years, I just felt this obligation to give everybody every benefit of the doubt possible, even though I knew they were in the wrong spot. I now bite the bullet, and when I realize they're in the wrong position, I either try to transfer them horizontally, vertically, or just let them go.
Jeff, this is Mark. Are you still on?
I still am.
Jeff, you talked about the fact that you, from listening to some of the things Bill's been talking about, that you wanted to take the higher route to bring in people that are, I guess, on that higher plane. And how did you change your interviewing process, or where you went to find people like that, or what is the difference between before and now?
Well, and I guess that's part of where we're struggling, because we're in the transition mode, and spent a lot of time listening to some of Bill's tapes to talk about the advice to applicants letter and how to get some pre-screening out of that. And I mean, generally going in, we had our staff, our existing staff, our present staff buy into that. We are in the process of developing the interviewing process at a little bit higher level, but I mean, you can't do it all at one time.
No.
We are fortunate in the fact that we have a wonderful staff for the most part. I let some people go about 3 months ago, and obviously, you know, they think the grass is always greener, but I think they found out when they got out there we're doing as well as anybody in the area. So they were a little scorned by the whole thing, and I think that sent a message to some of our staff. But it just grieves me when, you know, things are running along pretty well, and somebody, you know, maybe gets a table or two that just bums them out. And I mean, that negative stuff certainly, the negative stuff travels faster and brings people down faster than the positive stuff juices them up and gets them going.
Boy, isn't that the truth.
And, you know, if they just keep their mouths shut, but, you know, an hour later, the landscape looks different.
Yes.
And but it is a struggle, and we do try to be big on not jumping in people's faces in the middle of their shift, because, you know, that sends them off balance too.
That's for sure.
So we changed our hiring from the standpoint that you know, we're hoping that half the people that take these advice to applicants letter and application with them, we never see them again, because we all know that half of the people should have never bothered coming in to begin with. And you know, as we upgrade our interviewing process, we're going from a two-person interview, or two interviews with two different people, to three, including a member of the service staff, have them be interviewed by their peers. And that would be probably the third interview, because they seem, the people being interviewed seem to relax a little bit more in the second interview, and by the third interview you're getting a more accurate picture.
Very true.
But we also have to train the person, the server doing the interviewing, you know, what to look for.
Yes.
If we're sitting there, it defeats the purpose of the thing. So this is a long process, but we have real high hopes for it, and we're just fortunate that we're in a position that we can try to do this. We're not scrambling around for warm bodies, and, you know, our business is good enough that we attract pretty capable management people.
Right. Very good. Well, let me just quickly, for everybody that's still online, tell you just a little bit about my book. And it really goes down to, Bill, have you got everybody's address? You're going to send me a copy of the book.
Oh, yeah, I know where everybody is. I just make sure I got all the names. But that's why I check in from time to time.
Great. This is my definition of, my book's called Building the Dream Workforce, How to Make Good People Great and Great People Even Better. And this is what we define people that are members of a dream workforce to be. They are enterprising, customer-focused risk takers who don't know how to think small, hold themselves accountable for everything they do, make work fun for themselves and everyone else, and go on learning until the day they die. So maybe that'll breed a little discussion here. Any challenges to that definition, or any parts that really hit home?
It's Kevin and Peterborough calling. I've always tried to get my staff to learn more about this business. My kitchen manager, I sent him off to the local chef school, and he's got his papers, but he doesn't want to learn any more than that. And he's valuable to me, but he could earn more money if he went to the hotel down the street, or, you know, to one of the finer dining. And I'm not looking to get rid of him, but I'm kind of frustrated at the fact that they hit a certain level, they're comfortable, and then they don't want to move on from that.
They get to their comfort zone. You're right.
Yeah. I've done the same with my food and beverage servers. You can get a certification, a food and beverage server certification from the local community college, and then you can move on and get a certified food service manager's designation. And nobody seems to want to move up. They just get that comfort level and they stay there. And I need somebody who wants to challenge themselves and move on to something that's bigger and better.
We have a similar situation here as well. And
who's this?
This is Peter.
Okay, Peter.
From Cape Cod. We have, for instance, we have a barcode certified trainer that, I don't even know if you're familiar with barcode. It's like tips training for liquor service. Our manager went and got to be a trainer, a certified trainer, and we're trying to get the whole staff certified in barcode. And, you know, we're trying to make it fun, try to make it interesting, but, you know, so many of people in this business are really just here to make a buck and get the hell out, you know, and they don't take it all that seriously. And you try to instill that in them, and I guess that's the challenge. And it gets discouraging at times when you have people that, you know, think they know it all, don't really have any desire to know anymore. And what are your suggestions?
Well, one of the things that you need to be aware of, and I take myself as a prime example, when I graduated from Northern Illinois University years and years ago, the last thing I ever wanted to do in my life again was to go through any more educational processes. I was bored to death of education. My high school and college teachers and professors had just, they put me to sleep. And I think the first thing that you may want to look at, everybody, when it comes to the training is, I think it was Dave just a minute ago, or Jeff talking about the fact, or Kevin, that, you know, they try to make it fun. And how do you make it fun? Let them, certainly, it goes back to the interviewing process, is are you hiring the right kind of people that do want to move up? And at the same time, are you sure that your training is not only going to help them further their careers, but also that it's got some entertainment to it? I mean, if Bill Marvin got on stage and just presented the information with no stories in there or just in a monotone voice, it wouldn't go very far. So realize that you're up against it. Our colleges and high schools are doing not only a bad job of educating people, they're turning people off to education.
Makes sense.
I think we just had somebody else join the line here.
Somebody else come on?
Alex Half.
Oh, hey, Alex.
Where are you from, Alex? This is Mark Mayberry.
How you doing, Mark?
Good.
Philadelphia, outside of Philadelphia, Bucks
outside
County.
Outside of Philadelphia.
Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
We want Kevin Millwood back, Alex.
What can I tell you?
You know, how in the world do you trade one of your best pitchers to somebody in your own division? I mean, we're still very upset about that in Atlanta.
Well, I don't know how and why Philadelphia does anything. They do. So don't ask me about Atlanta.
Alex, since I don't know you, tell me just a little bit about your business.
Well, I have I used to have a 115-seat restaurant that was a combination of a local Cheers neighborhood bar, a gourmet TGI Fridays, and a place that features good quality beers. We have 20 beers on tap. We do not sell Bud. We don't sell Coors. We don't sell Miller.
Right.
You said
you used to have this.
Yeah, we burned down last June.
Oh, goodness.
And the Board of Health came in Friday, and we needed 98 to reopen, and they gave us a 97.
Oh.
I was going to ask you how that was coming.
So they were supposed to be back to reinspect today, but there's a major chain had a major food poisoning outbreak yesterday.
Well, that's good. That's good luck for you.
That's good. Yes, it is, as a matter of fact, because the location it had, it's around the corner.
I think you're opening better than ever.
Yeah.
That's right.
So Liquor Control Board was in today, and the building inspector was in today, and the fire marshal's in tomorrow. So we hopefully will be have another visit from the building inspector tomorrow, and we'll be able to open Friday.
Well, good luck with that.
Bill, if you're out this way.
Yes, sir. I'll be flying over you on my way to Italy.
All the beer you can drink, Bill.
I'll wave.
We have 225 bottles behind the bar. and we sell one bottle at a time. We feature a lot of Belgian beers.
Ah, that's good stuff.
But it's mid-fare. What else can I tell you?
All right.
Now,
Mary, are you still on?
Yep, still here.
Tell me about your restaurant.
Jenner's George's Positive Pizza and Pasta. We have, you know, kind of the basic pizza and pasta. One of our main things is obviously our decor, and, you know, we got a pink building. You know, it's a little crazy around here.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And, Peter, I didn't hear about yours in Cape Cod, if you're still on.
We are casual dining, American cuisine, American New England, I'd call it. I call it comfy cozy. Just sort of a local watering hole, comfortable place to go.
Right. And, Kevin, are you still here?
Yes, I am.
Tell me about yours.
The family-style steakhouse, roadhouse decor, big fireplace in the middle of the restaurant.
Oh, neat.
125 seats.
And that fireplace probably goes 12 months a year with that Canadian weather, huh?
Well, it's pretty warm out here today.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. It's in Celsius, we're about 20 degrees, and I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit.
That's getting up there.
Yeah.
That's getting up there.
But it was the coldest winter we've ever had.
Holy cow. Ever?
I'm in my 40s, and I can't remember anything being that cold.
That is amazing.
20 all the time.
Right.
And that's in a country where the national sport is freezing. So
Hey, we're further south than you are in Seattle.
Yeah, that's strange, isn't it?
Very strange.
Yeah. But we're in that little part of Canada that dips down below the 49th parallel. We're equal to Northern California.
Okay.
I think we're a lot colder.
Yeah, I would say you don't have that West Coast breezes.
No.
I mean, we're farther north than Minneapolis. So don't we're,
yep.
We're certainly nowhere near that weather pattern.
No.
Which is fine.
Well, I'm in Atlanta, and a week ago we had an earthquake that actually woke me at 5 in the morning, and today we've got those tornadoes that went through Kansas City trying to creep through. So it's been quite a week here in weather.
Yeah, those tornadoes are coming up to Canada right now.
Mm. Any other questions for anybody or anything else you want to discuss in particular?
I missed, I just got on the line, Alex, Pennsylvania. I just got on the line. I don't know what you do. I missed the part about you, who you are.
I'm Mark Mayberry, and I've got a book out called Building the Dream Workforce, How to Make Good People Great and Great People Even Better.
Which
and
I will send you a copy of, Alex.
Okay.
You get a free copy for being online today from my friend Bill Marvin. Bill and I know each other through the National Speakers Association. And we've been friends for quite some time now. I go around the country, I give speeches based on my book and also another presentation that I call Awesome and Irresistible Service, talking about how to put Shazam in your service. I say Shazam because my last name's Mayberry, and that seems to fit. But we've been talking so far a lot about what do you do when you've got a bad apple in a crate. It's hard to get rid of them, but boy, you need to. Of course, you're starting all over, Alex, so you've got the wonderful opportunity of starting from scratch.
Well, actually, I've got about 90% of my people coming back.
Oh, that's great.
That does something for you.
And I'm very, very happy. Well, we went out and found jobs when we had the fire. We went out and found jobs for all our good people. And then, of course, when we're ready to come back to open, the jobs that we found them, they didn't make as much money as they make working for me. So
yeah, you don't
all
find
back
a job where they're going to make more money.
Yeah, they all want to come back. And the ones that were really, really great were taken back, and the ones that weren't so great, well, you know, they're all on probation. Everybody's on probation, actually.
Yes.
Even the people that are coming back, they're still on probation because they may not be the same people that they were when they left, and you know, we made that clear.
Yes.
Well,
I was talking a few minutes ago about a guy that I used to have work for me in the apparel business. It was the bad apple. And one thing that he kept telling me over and over again was, you know, if it wasn't for me, he'd go work someplace else because he could make more money and have a better career, and throwing that guilt trip on me. And then, of course, when we did let him go, then, you know, I looked back 10, 15 years later, and he's nowhere near where the level he was with me. So you can't buy into their guilt trips either that they try and throw on you.
I've always been lucky. Whenever I got ready to fire somebody or let somebody go, for some strange reason, they always seemed to know that it was going to happen before it happened. I used to tell them that I thought that we really, really needed to have a discussion about their work habits.
Right.
And I'd like to set an appointment with them for next Friday at noon. And they kind of had it all figured out what was going to happen next Friday at noon.
That makes sense.
So, you know, but they started thinking about it, and then come about Thursday afternoon, they called up and quit.
Well, that might be a strategy for everybody online.
One thing that reminds me of something, when I was at the Olympic Training Center, if we would have a serious incident, I'd never done things this way before, but we had a human resources department that actually was pretty good. And let's say that we had someone that we thought was stealing. We'd never fire anybody on the spot. We'd always suspend them pending investigation. And it would take about a week to get the investigation done, and by the time we got the investigation done, they'd already found a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made it a lot easier than that knee-jerk reaction, you know, you're out of here, idiot, and then you go through all the problems with labor boards and unemployment, every other stupid thing. So I think that idea of giving them a chance to come to their own conclusion is brilliant.
Right.
I had a bartender that we use spotters every 6 to 9 months, and I would just, you know, when we had a problem that a spotter discovered, I would just call the bartender in and say, the spotters were in, and do we don't really need to discuss this any further, do we? I'll let you go, and I won't tell anybody why you left, and we'll leave it alone at that.
Interesting.
And they usually just said, well, see you later, Alex. Thanks for keeping me as long as you did.
It's Kevin in Peterborough here.
Yeah, Kevin.
When I let somebody go, it's usually at the end of progressive discipline, but I always follow it up with a letter to the person that I've terminated explaining exactly why.
Right.
I was taken to the labor board once. Basically, they wanted their severance pay, and they were terminated for not showing up. And I won my case because I highlighted everything that they had done and went to the labor board with that information, and I won that. But ever since, I've always followed up with letters stating why they were terminated, and also, I guess, maybe at the end saying, you know, you're a good person, but you just didn't meet, you know, the standards that we need, and, you know, good luck in your future. I've never been pulled up since.
The amazing thing about it is so many of these people go on and find something that just really turns them on, and they have very successful careers. They just weren't right for the restaurant industry.
Yeah, sometimes you're doing them a favor by letting them go.
You really are.
And some of them that I fired want back because, you know, they found that it was a pretty good place to work.
That's very true.
It's still Kevin here. I meet with one of my employees at least once a week. Like, I schedule 3 o'clock Friday afternoons, and each week it's a different employee. And I basically just want to, you know, how's it going? You know, where do you want to be 1 year from now, 5 years from now? I ask them, what do we do right? What do we do wrong? And then after listening to the Bill's latest tape, Mark, this was your question. What would you do, or what would you change if you owned this this business?
Yes.
The answers I'm getting are totally, completely different from what I expected.
I love that question.
Yeah. It has surprised me.
Good for you for using it. I like to see you implement ideas. That's terrific. So many people listen to tapes and go to seminars, and then they go back and don't change a darn thing, but you're obviously ahead of the game.
Well, it's just trying to get different information from the people that work for me. They're the ones that are here when I'm not here. And, you know, I sometimes have an idea who on my team is not performing, but it's always the people that, you know, meet with me in these meetings, they tell me who's not performing, and
yes,
it's the same person. It works out well. I think it's a great tool just to sit down with one person each week and, you know, just shoot the shit and find out what's going on.
Great idea.
Well, particularly if you get some good ideas and you actually implement them, people know that they might you might actually do something with what they tell you. They won't bring you junk.
That's for sure. Don't bring me a problem. Bring me a solution. You talk about, you know, you can't be with, you're not going to be there all the time. You certainly can't know everybody that comes in. As you grow and get busy, it gets more and more difficult. One thing, I don't remember, Bill, if we talked about this on my CD or not, but I found this to be something that my audiences just really perk up when I tell them about, and that's, it comes from the rental industry, and there's a lady in Champaign, Illinois, her name is Debbie Harriet, and they rent anywhere from chairs and tents and tables, anything you need for a party or something similar to that. And as Debbie's business was growing, she was getting frustrated with the fact that she wasn't able to be there with each of her customers. She didn't know all of them anymore, and knew there were some things that they were probably telling her team members that she wasn't hearing. So she put out this 4x6 bright pink card, and on it says, "I had to say no to a customer today for the following reason. No, we can't, don't, won't." And that has been absolutely fantastic for her. I asked her, I said, "Debbie..." Excuse me? Did somebody ask a question?
No, all right. I think you just started to echo. Go ahead.
Okay. The question again is, I had to say, or the, what she put on the card is, "I had to say no to a customer today for the following reason. No, we can't, don't, won't." And I asked Debbie, I said, "Tell me where this has affected your business. Why should I tell my audiences in other industries about this?" And she said, "Mark, you know, we had... when we started to fill these things out, we put them in stacks by what items they were asking for, what they were asking for in services that we didn't provide. And right away, we noticed one stack getting large very quickly, and that was for white wooden chairs." And she said, "Mark, we'd always rented chairs, but they were brown. We couldn't see what difference bringing in white ones would make. But we went ahead. That's what our customers were asking for, so we brought in some white wooden chairs. And then the next 6 months, her entire chair rental section went up 40% in rentals. So I think that's one of the challenges of any business owner, is you get so darn busy you just can't be there with your eyes on everything like you'd like to be. So do you have a system? That'd be one thing I'd ask everybody that's still online. Do you have a system so when a customer asks one of your servers or the maitre d' or whatever the situation might be for something that you don't have, does that get back to you?
Yeah, you really need a way to capture that on the spot, because otherwise they have a tendency to get
lost.
Your
culture, unless the culture of your organization is that you say yes, or that you do anything within your power to accommodate.
Right.
Which, of course, we all like to think we have that type of culture. I don't know.
Maybe absolutely. But there are some things they ask for that you just can't, you know, if they all suddenly ask for caviar and that's not on your menu, there's nothing the server could do that night. But I would certainly hope if she got 15 or 20 requests in a week for caviar that there'd be a way that you at least know people are asking for that.
Yeah.
Well, the guys that have been with me for a while have heard me talk about Angus Barn in Raleigh. And the first time that Joel Cohen and I were going to go there, he had thought that his wife and daughter might join us. And so when he made the reservation, we mentioned that his wife and daughter were going to be along. When we got there, the greeter said, "You know, where's your daughter?" So all that information had gotten from the person who answered the phone to the reservation, and it always impresses me when that happens, because when one person in the place knows it, everybody in the place knows it, and that's just so brilliant when it happens.
It's like going into a hotel and you tell them your name at the front desk, and some hotels, very few, you know, the room attendants, the bellman, everybody knows your name within 30 seconds, and other hotels they ask your name but never use it.
Who was it that told the story about the guy that worked at a gas station, and he wrote the name of the customer on the inside portion of the gas flap? So every time a customer came in, he could say, hi, you open the gas cap, the gas lid, then he'd see the name, and then he'd walk around and talk to the customer. And of course, when the guy gave him a credit card, that's when he found out what the customer's name was.
Very interesting. I had a client here in the same kind of industry. They were in the auto repair business. And whenever they saw a customer drive up, it was like a fun contest. There was no money or anything with it, but who could first yell out the name of the customer so everybody was aware of it when somebody walked in? They just made it fun, and they focused on that. Whereas opposed to the first story in my book about this dry cleaners that I used for over a year, and I drove up there one day, and I finally got sick and tired of the fact that I'd been there a year. They'd asked my name every time I came up, and yet this woman still didn't know who I was. She kept having to ask me what my name was. Drove me crazy.
And yet a clever system like that is very impressive. We recently put together a mystery shopping questionnaire, and I know everyone likes the whole using the cardholder's name from the credit card when you when you cash out. But I'll tell you, my staff has a real aversion to that, and I, as a cardholder, do too, because it's so pretentious. It's like, yes, of course you know my name. You have my credit card. Impress me by learning my name some other way, or before you get my credit card, and then I'll feel special.
Isn't that the truth?
But we actually nixed it from the form, and I don't encourage the staff to do it anymore because they really just felt so insincere about it. What's that?
You're hearing the echoes, too. We're getting echoes today for some reason. Must be my thunderstorm here in Atlanta.
Well, we're going to implement the frequent flyer program. We got it with our new point-of-sale system. We're not calling it frequent flyer. We're calling it VIP diner program. But customers will have the opportunity to pay to join.
Build points.
And, pardon me?
Build points. Save points.
Yes,
up.
Build points. Mm-hmm. When they come in, the server is going to ask them if they're a member of the Frequent Flyer Club, and if they are, she'd like to have their card so that she can have their points to make sure their points get applied. And then she'll know who the customer is right there.
Yeah, that's good.
Right there. If she can walk away and come back, when she comes back, then she can say, hi, Mr. Jones, I'm sorry I didn't, whatever.
Right.
But it's another way to get the opportunity to learn a customer's name and use it.
Well, I mean, you can get it at the door. Even if you're going to see people directly, you can ask them. And at Regus in Knoxville, the greeter just asks your name, and they write it down on a little card, a little seating card, which also is the comment card, and then when they take it to the table, they put it on the table like a little table tent, and when the greeter comes up, the server comes up, they've got the information.
I like that idea better than mine.
It's
anything you can do that will encourage using the names of your customers is about as powerful a thing as you can do in your business, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
People love
Peter,
to
you're
hear
still
their
doing.
Names.
You've got the photos of the on the back. You still doing that?
Who's that? Me?
Yeah.
What, photos on the back of
didn't,
what?
Didn't you say that you were taking Polaroids of your?
Oh yeah, we did that for a while. We were doing it's sort of regulars.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you would start to realize when somebody dropped off too. We just had a bulletin board. In the pantry area, where anytime we had a regular customer, we would just take their picture, and on the back we'd write, their favorite drink, what they like to order, what table they like to sit on, things like that, and they really sort of got into it. We still have some of them hanging up, but that was actually a couple few years ago, and I think it just sort of we thought we had most of them, and I don't know, with the change of season, it's like anything else, just sort of dropped off. But it worked well for a while. I really should think about doing it again. Especially with digital cameras now, too, it's a little easier.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite restaurant here in where I live, I'm in a little town called Woodstock, Georgia, and it's northwest of Atlanta, about 30 miles from downtown. And there's a little sports bar here that I just love to go in because from the very first time I walked in, the bartender shook my hand, asked my name, and they have gone out of their way to remember it. There's, I feel like it is a neighborhood bar where they know me. Everybody that works behind the bar certainly knows me every time I walk in. Now, on the tables, the servers are a little different situation. I see more turnover there. But again, just feeling like I'm part of that little sports bar makes me keep going back and back and back.
Well, Sherry's coffee shop chain up here, to get on the regular staff at Sherry's, you got to know the names of 50 regulars.
Right.
You can't learn 50 names, you don't work here. And they made it part of the system. And there are servers, for every 100 names you learn after that, you get a little plaque on the wall, and there are servers in these coffee shops that allegedly, at least, know 1,400 names. But we made it part of the system.
And that's what it takes, is where the people that are on the phone today, where is your focus, and how much input do you have as far as getting your team fired up to remember names?
Yeah.
It is important.
Well, it takes more work, and your competitors aren't willing to do that work. So,
thank goodness.
Well, we know the chains aren't, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, to say the least.
No, and I think that's got to be one of the major competitive advantages of an independent, is that you are willing to do that, and that it's important enough for you to do it, and people will, I mean, every time they come to you, it's one less chance that somebody else has to make an impression on them.
That's right.
What else is on anybody's mind today? I'll make sure we get everybody in here. Dave, you got anything going on?
No, I'm just listening in today.
Okay.
What kind of restaurant is J.J. Finnegan's, Dave?
We're casual dining.
Okay.
We're located in a shopping mall.
In a mall itself?
In a mall, so we have an outside entrance. But
okay.
We're attached to the mall.
How can you afford the rent? Goodness.
Well, we're making it.
That's great.
Our town has been discovered by all the national chains. So in the last couple of years, we've had Applebee's move in and Ruby Tuesday's move in and Logan's Roadhouse is going up in about 6 months. So there's more on the way, I'm sure.
Right.
Well, now's when you really need to build your customer database so that you can do marketing directly to those customers, so they'll feel like they're your customers.
Right, that's right. We've been collecting names for quite a while now, and we do an occasional mailing. Everybody at our place that fills out a comment card with an address on it gets a thank you note. That's a coupon for a couple dollars off next time they come in. And I usually have the server that waited on them write the note.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
that seems to be encouraging people to come in a little more often, and it's also starting to encourage people to ask for a particular server.
Right.
That seems to help a little bit when if it's a slow day or something, a server who's sent a lot of cards out might get a few more people, a few more tables than everybody else, and
that's a good thing.
So that's working for us.
That's great. Good idea.
Have you visited these new guys that are coming in? Have you been to one of their stores to see what they're up to?
We visit from time to time, but I don't have a regular program, like a spy program.
I mean, you're familiar with the operation.
Yeah. I mean, I know what their menu's like and the concept and everything.
One of the things that you might want to do is start to educate people as to what you are doing that is better, different, or whatever. Not to badmouth them, but as an example, I've told this story a couple of times. I had a client in Kansas City, an old line Italian restaurant. They've been there forever. This was back in the early 80s when Olive Garden was the hot concept, and Olive Garden opened up about half a mile away from them and just killed them for a while, which they knew was going to happen. And when they see their regulars come back after being gone for a little bit, they said, well, you've been over to Olive Garden, and they were kind of, they're a little bit embarrassed and said, well, yeah, we did. And they said, well, welcome back. There's a whole lot more to Italian food than just salad and breadsticks. And then when they went back to Olive Garden, what they saw was a whole lot of salad and breadsticks and not that much of anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an opportunity. I mean, they're going to go and they're going to check it out. The question is, if you have educated them as to what you are doing that your competitors aren't willing to do, they go there and look around and they say, yeah, boy, we could have been at JJ's. And it's that, gee, I could have had a V8 mentality. Mm-hmm. But you have to educate folks as to why they come to you. And I think we got to be doing that all the time anyway.
Yes.
But particularly if you do it in advance, you know that they're going to go check it out. They'll go check it out and go, mm-hmm, okay, great. And they'll come back and be comfortable with you.
Uh-huh. Well, we had three chains open within a month of each other. And, of course, we knew they were coming. And we suggested to our customers that they go visit them. And, to come back and comment to us if there was anything that we weren't doing that they thought we needed to do as a result of going to these other places. And amazingly, with three new chains all at the same time, our business never fell below 5%.
That's fabulous.
And people would come in and they'd say, gee, Alex, we went over to such and such's and, you know, those guys aren't doing anything special. And, of course, we had changed our menu roughly 3 months before that, and we had made it very clear on our menu. Part of your story on your menu. And, of course, we're Isaac Newton's. Our name is a historic name. And Isaac, when he was a kid, there were no refrigerated ox carts. So we can't buy frozen food from Chicago and have it shipped in and then thaw it out for you.
Right.
So we made that as part of our menu. So people read that, and then they started going to the chains and knowing that everything was frozen and it was made someplace else. They started thinking about those things.
Great idea.
We said we don't serve any frozen hockey puck burgers here. and we just took shots and shots and shots and all over our menu. In the description of items that were on the menu, we took a shot at the chains. And the people they got it. So you're lucky that you have the opportunity. You know they're coming, so mm-hmm. Get ready to do battle. Because you're going to have to do battle.
Best defense is always a good offense.
Uh-huh. Well, that's all good advice. Thank you very much.
Anything you can do before they come, do it. Don't wait till they're there.
Yeah, you can't wait till they're there, because if people get over there and they're impressed, you might not see them again.
Uh-huh.
So I need to educate you as to what you're looking for when you go there. Because it's going to be new and it's going to be fresh and there's all
right.
That energy with a new place, and that's always nice.
Well, I like your story about, there's more than just salad and breadsticks, and that really put the focus. And I'm sure the next time somebody went there after they'd heard that, it just overwhelmed them that this is all there is. And,
uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And certainly drew them back.
Yeah, but you don't say, gee, they're terrible and they're nasty.
No.
They're not terrible and nasty. You're just better.
Yeah.
That's right.
And here's why.
Yeah.
And here's why.
Our servers, when we had chains move in, would go and say, now, I'm sure you're going to go to Applebee's, but will you please come back and let me know what it was like?
Right.
And they love to come back and say, well, it was good, but the sandwich wasn't as big, or the filet wasn't as good. And they like to, and when they say it themselves, to you, they're reinforcing their own thoughts.
Absolutely right.
Very true.
I think there's also that opportunity that, to say, well, what did you see over there that you really liked,
mm-hmm.
that you'd like to see us do? I'm like, ooh, well, then I like this. So you take whatever little attractive thing there may be and then just incorporate it so you don't have to go there to get it. But it does sort of point up that this is not a do it once and forget about it kind of thing. This is an all the time, be aware of what's happening and see how you can take that and use it to your advantage. I mean, if you're any good at all and your market is any good at all, you're going to have people come in and try to get a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's good news when you've got competition coming, because it just says, and if Applebee's is willing to come in and invest $1 million in putting a restaurant in the market, then they've got to think that there's business there.
In our area, we had an Applebee's, a Bennigan's, and a Red Lobster all move in the same summer, but they were staggered about a month apart. And since then, we still have the Bennigan's, but everyone's gone.
Hmm.
No kidding.
So it's a good thing for me.
That's very good, Mary.
Terrific. Well, listen, guys, I think we've... Anybody have anything else we want to work on here, or we've pretty much got it? I know you all got you have things to go and things to do and places to be and all that. I don't want to hold you on the line any longer than we need to. You know, Mark, you've got a few things going on today as well. So,
well, this is Mark, and I just want to thank everybody for taking the time to get on the phone today. I've enjoyed the conversation. If I'm ever in your area, I'll certainly stop in and see what's going on.
I'll send you a list of the addresses and so forth, and I will get I'll get the books off to all of you tomorrow, so you've got a little bit more of this as well. So thank you all for
great. Thanks, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.